Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast, hosted by Renita Ray Davis, licensed clinical social worker, board-approved social work clinical supervisor, and facilitator of the Goddesses of Social Work supervision community. Join us as we travel through the social work journeys told by the Goddesses of Social Work community members, past and present, as they make their way toward clinical licensure.
Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast and our special series highlighting speakers and guests of the upcoming Affirming Our Presence Behavioral Health Conference, June 20th through 23rd, 2024, in Plano, Texas. I'm your host, Renita Ray Davis, and I'm here today with Dr. Kinshara Cravens, LMSW, LGSW, whose Affirming Our Presence conference topic is Changing Perspectives with SEL in Low-Income and Minority Areas. Dr. Cravens believes everyone is capable of change. It is this tenet that has led to her pursuing her calling in social work. With a singular goal of empowering as many individuals as she can, she finds ways to contribute through service, mentorship, and compassion. Dr. Cravens earned her PhD in social work from Walden University in 2023. Her dissertation is titled Experiences and Perceptions of Hospital Social Workers, wherein she explores the commonly misunderstood world of social work in the hospital arena, a subject she knows well, as she will also be earning the title of Licensed Clinical Social Worker this year. She is currently a licensed master social worker and a licensed graduate social worker, as well as a current assistant professor at Prairie View A&M University. Inspired by her own achievements in the nonprofit space, Dr. Cravens established Craving for a Change Foundation, Inc. The foundation's overarching goal is to institute social, emotional learning strategies for adolescents and young adult students attending the Galveston County Public School System. With social work and the youth ever present as her impetus, Kinshara Cravens truly is a maven in her field. As she continues to fuel her appetite for knowledge and works to empower her peers, she looks forward to what the future holds. Welcome to the show, Dr. Cravens.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad you're here. Dr. Cravens, can you expound on the definition of SEL for those who may not be aware of that particular buzz phrase?
Sure. I'll give also what the acronym stands for as well. So SEL stands for social emotional learning, which is a concept that you will see utilized mostly in school settings where children mostly are being taught about their emotions, how to address those emotions, how to identify what the emotions are. And it comes with five core competencies that we work with the kids. So it's self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, responsible decision-making, and relationship skills. So within the SEL model, the different things that we're teaching the children will follow those competencies to some capacity.
Why do you feel like those five tenets are important now?
When I first began working with adolescents, because I came from geriatrics, you can tell just off the bat that the children are just missing some of those social skills. And to me, those five core competencies are in line with social skills, with knowing how to even make a doctor's appointment or talk to an adult on the phone. That goes to me with social awareness, being aware of how you communicate with people. So I think these core pillars help children to become adults, honestly. And SEL is not just for children. You see it mostly used with children, but it's also a concept that can be used with adults because, as you know, some of us were not taught some of those core concepts that help us with adulthood. So I think those five pillars allow you to be able to break into adulthood with some information that can help you be more successful.
You are now Dr. Cravens, but before that, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
So quite different from social work, I guess, to a certain capacity. I actually wanted to be a lawyer, specifically an entertainment lawyer. I wanted to work with the stars, help them with their contracts. That's what I wanted to do. And up until I got to college, that's what my plan was.
You know what? I love that so much. And so then what What changed? Don't go into your social work journey yet, but why did you move away from entertainment law?
So at orientation at the school I attended, they allowed you to do a mock class for the major you were interested in. And so my school didn't have a pre-law focus, but most people took either political science, public affairs, public policy, majored in one of those things. So I did political science, was going to be my major. I took the mock class and I said, there's no way this is what I'm going to be able to do. So I immediately went to my advisor, and they advised me to just take go in undecided and just take three intro classes to majors that I was interested in.
I love that. And you know what? I appreciate that your undergrad university did that because I have worked with so many students who are all the way in their senior year and they're like, oh my gosh, this is not what I want to do for the rest of my life.
And you're right. And I even advise the high school kids that I work with, it's okay if you have to change your major, but change it as early as possible. So I tell them, if you are thinking about a major, go ahead in that first year, that freshman year, and take that intro class so you can be able to really tell if this is what you want to do. Because, just like I said, from as early as I can remember, probably like seven, I wanted to be a lawyer that quick. Going to that class, I'm like, oh no, this is not it. Too much law, too many things I have to remember. No, I was over it.
I appreciate that. Dr. Krivitz, why did you want to work with the stars? What was it about wanting to work with the stars that appealed to you at such a young age?
The money, the flash, it was all of that stuff. I knew in my head, I was like, oh, if I'm working with Beyonce. And her salary is this, then I know my salary will be this. I'm like, I knew if she needed me for something, I would at least be making some type of money at that age. That's what I was thinking. The money.
I appreciate that. And you know what? It's not too late because that is on my vision board to work with Beyonce as a
Hello.
social worker.
Yes.
Exactly. She says everything she touches lights up. So I just want to be in her aura. But
Yes.
you know, I was talking to a social worker. She actually was on the podcast maybe 20 episodes ago. And we were talking about that. Social workers are in entertainment. And working with, NBA players and NFL players. And so I know you're working right now with youth, but and you're about to tell us about your social work journey, but it's actually that dream is still possible.
Absolutely. I don't want to give too much right now, but I will say if I do, it probably wouldn't be in the traditional social work space.
I'm right here with you. Absolutely. Well, right now you are in anyway, the traditional social work space. Tell me a little bit about your social work journey. It sounds like it started with one of those intro classes.
Definitely. So following that conversation with my advisor, I signed up for Intro to Social Work, a business class, and I always forget what the third one was. That's how far removed I was with that class. But I signed up to Intro to Social Work, and it was awesome. I had great professors, and I try to do this with my students as well, that give you a good insight of what, outside of the textbook, right? There is an actual, I call it the real social work world. And so they gave us a real insight of what social work actually looked like outside of the textbook, and I fell in love. So of course got my bachelor's degree. I stayed in my same university, and I did the advanced standing program that following year, graduated with my master's. While in school for my master's, I went ahead and got licensed at the bachelor's level, and I worked for a hospice agency while I was in school receiving my master's degree. When I graduated, I started working on the hospice and home of side of that same agency. I stayed in the town that I was in school in for a year, I think, after I graduated. And by the time I left, I ended up getting a job at the hospital working on their long-term acute care floor. So I did that. Always been a two-job social worker. So I did that full-time in the hospice agency that I worked at while I was in school. They kept me on part-time. So started off working with geriatrics, working in hospice home health. Once I left the school town that I lived, I went to school in Nacogdoches. I went back to Houston area and I worked again for hospice with a side job doing home health. I stayed there for 2 years. I left there, went to a nursing home, geriatrics again. Did not last at the nursing home for long. I did not like the responsibilities that social workers are required to have at nursing homes, especially being one person, having 150, 200 residents to be responsible for. I couldn't do it. So I stayed there for 6 months. From working in the nursing home, I ended up moving to St. Joseph's, which is a hospital in downtown Houston. The interesting thing about St. Joseph's is it is the only hospital that's right there downtown. All the other hospitals are in the med center, which is like 5 minutes from there. So we received a lot of homeless population. When I started, I was the only social worker on my floor. Everybody else was nurse case managers. And as you probably know, that comes with some barriers. So I'm working hard as a dog. They're giving me all of these long-term clients who had been in the hospital. One of the clients that I got out, she had been in the hospital for 16 months. She ended up going brain dead while she was there, and they couldn't find family for her. So I was tasked with getting her guardianship, doing all of these things. So I worked there for a year and a half. So I was asked to come back to my old high school, and that's when I was introduced to the SEL concept by my old principal. So I came in, I did some volunteer work there, and that's what made me want to start my own nonprofit. With working with those children, I was able to definitely understand how important it was to incorporate SEL with your instruction, or even if it's not with your instruction, kids need to be introduced to it in some capacity. We had children who were upset with what they were verbalizing with something else. You couldn't identify what that emotion was. You were expressing a different emotion. When someone did something so simple as to bump into you in the hallway on accident, you automatically felt like you had to give the anger emotion. So really being able to help them identify those emotions, what's triggering those emotions, and ways that they can handle those emotions became very important. So that's how I started the nonprofit. So while working at the hospital, I started the nonprofit. For the first couple of months of the nonprofit, I wasn't doing anything on my own per se. I was still working with my principal, coming in volunteering. The following year, I was asked to come to the after school program that we have with the school district and actually be an after school vendor doing groups, doing the SEL. So we started off with just one school. So while doing that, the nonprofit and working in a hospital, I ended up leaving the hospital as my full-time job, and I transferred over to UnitedHealthcare working remotely. I worked there as a service coordinator for 3 years while still having my nonprofit. After working there for 3 years, I transitioned from there to Prairie View A&M, where I got a full-time professor position there. So currently, I work with Prairie View. I've been there since 2022, and then I have my nonprofit. So as the years went on, that was back in 2019 when I started the nonprofit. Now, 5 years later, next month, we have been able to grow from just being in one school to now we're in seven schools, and we actually are being paid by the school district to provide their services. So it's myself, and I have five staff members that work for me, and we rotate to the different schools. Some things I might have missed with my social work journey, in addition to the nonprofit, I also have two other businesses. I have a social work consulting and therapy business. Of course, the therapy is your traditional therapy. I also have my LCDC, so I do some drug treatment therapy. And then I'm also a part of the pregnant children and women's program. I just got approved for that this year, so hopefully we'll start doing some case management with that up under that business. And then I've been asked before for some of the agencies that I've worked for, like the nursing homes in particular. Can you come in? We don't have a social worker. Help me clean my books up. Can you train a new social worker? So I do some of that stuff in the consulting piece. And then I sell a social work bag. It's a leather bag and it has the social work bag on it. And so I sell that as well as my book up under the medical social worker therapy and consultant. And then outside of that, I have a business that me and a colleague of mine created called the Works Cards, and they're self-help therapeutic cards. And right now, the deck that we have out is called Young Black Professionals Matter. So it has five different categories. It has when provoked, affirmations, education. And so it has just different things that you can self-help and use with yourself, especially as you are transitioning into the professional world. I know for me, my parents were blue-collar workers, so I didn't have, your traditional education on professional etiquette because my parents didn't necessarily have to have that. So in that deck, we had that tailored in mind with some of the things that we have to learn about that we experienced being professionals. Like, how can you contact the EOC? What is the EOC? Like, those are things that we did not know. So we talk about things like that with the deck. So yeah, that was my social work journey. Sorry, it was a lot of information, but that was my journey.
That is amazing. That is an amazing journey. And I actually have a lot of
Okay.
questions. I'm going to go all the way back to, I think I am going to go all the way back to what was it about that Social Work 101 class that you fell in love with?
Honestly, if I had another professor, I probably wouldn't have liked it so much. The professor, she really was great about really breaking down everything. Like, she exposed us to so many different careers. Like, the VA, I never knew social workers worked at the VA. So she exposed us to the different areas that you can work in as a social worker. We had social workers that came in and were guest speakers, and we also did like mock social work experiments. And that was really like, okay, so this is what it's like being a social worker. So it was being able to be exposed because, again, like you said earlier, everyone thinks CPS. And so in my head, I'm thinking, well, I have to go to somebody's house and knock on the door and investigate you for your kids. Ew. But when you tell me I can go to a family's home and educate them, for some people, this might not sound appealing, but I loved hospice. I can go educate you on end of life and how to prepare yourself. I'm a planner. I can help you plan this so when it comes, you don't have to be so frazzled and feel like you have anxiety. I love that. I was like, okay, I can do this. So it was really that exposure to the career path of social work that really sold me.
I love that. And you know what? Actually, I was thinking when you just said that, a lot of people have been using this podcast too in their social work classes to listen to all the different types of social work. That, yeah, because there's so many people in policy, hospice, hospital, prison settings. There's just so many different social workers who I've had the honor of interviewing, and they're being able to be exposed in that way too. So I love that that professor did that for you. So yay for her. And the other, so I am gonna go in order of the way I wrote my questions down. I also have my BSW and I didn't get my LBSW. And in my 24-year career, I only have two regrets, and that's one of my regrets. Can we talk?
Really?
Yeah, I know it doesn't matter anymore. But I'm like, man, I wish I'd got my LBSW. Talk about if you're okay with this, Dr. Cravens. Why do you think it was so important, even though you were in your master's program? Because I was in my master's and I'm like, no, I won't worry about it. But then I couldn't go backwards. Once you got your master's, you had to get the LMSW or the LGSW. Why do you think it was so important to get that LBSW even while getting your master's or even before having your master's?
So honestly, I wasn't gonna get it at first because I knew I wanted to get my master's, but I was offered the job. So I ended up crazy. If you don't mind, I want to tell this story. I was at Walmart and I had a social work shirt on, like from my school department. And I met a lady named Deborah Thompson, never will forget her. And she was like, "Are you a social worker?" And I was like, "Well, I just graduated. Well, I'm about to graduate." And so me and her talked, and she was like, "Come meet me at my office." Didn't know where her office was. Ended up finding out she was the director for the hospice agency. It was a brand new hospice agency, and she wanted a black social worker. Met her, we talked. She was like, "All you need to do is get your license." And I was like, "Okay." Because at that point, my parents were still helping my bills. And I'm like, I would love to be able to get a $50,000, $55,000 salary job while I'm in school so I can, help myself. But then on the flip side, I wanted to do it, but I wasn't go the other reason why I wanted to do it was because I wanted to have some experience when I had my LMSW or when I got my master's. But I wasn't going to do it because it was so many people that were like, of course, you don't need it. It helps, but you didn't need it. But honestly, if it probably wasn't for that job offer, I probably wouldn't have done it.
But it also allowed you to work and get your master's at the same time. I just think that those folks who are listening with getting their BSW or have the BSW haven't considered yet going back to get their master's, get that LBSW because it also has value and it opens doors that you may not have realized were possible.
Absolutely. And I did not mention this in my story. All those jobs that you heard me talk about, I had my LBSW and my master's until I got to UnitedHealthcare. And I was able to get those jobs with great salaries at that point. I was getting $70,000-$80,000 with my LBSW and my master's degree. So it's definitely worth it to me. The test is expensive. It is a burden, whatever, but it's an investment the way I look at it.
Absolutely. Especially if you're making 70, 80, we can do $260 for the test.
Hello.
Right. Exactly.
Because I'm like, you can even use Klarna on the test now. So, like,
Oh, I
what's the
didn't know
excuse?
that.
Yes.
Oh,
Yes.
awesome. Awesome. I'm so glad we talked about that because that is one of my biggest regrets. And to hear you talk about how successful you were able to be with that LBSW, that is awesome. Dr. Cravens, I am curious because I work with a lot of folks who work in the hospital setting. I work with a lot of social workers who work in the hospital setting. And I love the title of your dissertation, Experiences and Perceptions of Hospital Social Workers. Can you, and where you explore the commonly misunderstood world of social work in the hospital arena? Please, I let the public know. What are the commonly misunderstood misperceptions of the world of social work in the hospital
So
setting?
some of the things that were found in doing my dissertation was that number one, there are a lack of role definition between the nurse case managers and the social work case managers. That was a big thing that was a reoccurring thing that popped up in all of the interviews. Another thing was that, of course, and we know this already because we're social workers, there are lack of resources. We also talked a lot about hospital administration and their unrealistic goals. And those were like the main three things that these social workers continue. I think I interviewed 12 social workers before I reached saturation. And these were topics that were continuous. These were continuous, continuous, continuous. And a lot of times, from what the social workers have said, and I'm gonna say from my experience too, family members of patients, they think that these things that they need are so simple and all of these different things. And there are so many barriers from the insurance companies to the hospital systems that are preventing these clients from really getting the services that they need. So I would say that's one of the biggest misconceptions is that the clients and their family members think that the social workers oftentimes are not doing what they're supposed to do, but it's really we're not allowed to because of whatever constraints we have from insurance or hospital administration to do those things.
Absolutely. And I love that you brought that first one up too, the role distinction between the social work case manager and the RN case manager or the nurse case manager. And what I'm finding just working with the social workers I have the honor to work with, there's a lot of bitterness and anger that sometimes between those two professions. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. And I'm going to speak to it, of course, from a personal perspective. I think for me, it came from two reasons. My first reason for me having kind of some anger towards the nurses was their salary was so much higher. The hospital I was at, in conversation, I found out one of my coworkers was making $99,000 while I'm making 78. And I'm the one who was taking care of those clients that I just told you about who had been in the hospital for 16 months. I'm doing that. You're doing these easy peasy clients who have insurance, and all you got to do is send an order over to the insurance company. So, from a social worker perspective, I think we have some anger about the salary that they're being provided, being that the work that they're doing, depending on the setting, of course, is minimal compared to what we're doing. And I think for them, they have anger towards us because as social workers, we're diverse. We've done case management. Even if you haven't done case management, we can come into settings and we can easily do it. And from a nurse who's used to running IVs and doing these different things, when they come into case management, it's not as easy as they think it is. And they think because social workers do it, it's easy because you don't really know what we do as social workers. And so you come into it and you have a better of appreciation for us now because you can't do our job. You're calling us for help, you know? So I think those are the two folds that I've seen. I think for us, our biggest issue is that they're getting compensated so highly for them to do little work. And I think they're angry with us because we're able to do our work easy and they're not.
And, even just we just came out of Social Work Month, And we have a whole month, and sometimes it's literally at the end of the month before our hospitals, organization, agencies remember to acknowledge us. And nurses have just a week, but they got billboards and radio spots and all that. So I think it's not just the monetary compensation, but just how social workers are valued and not
And
feeling
recognize.
valued and recognized,
Yes.
yeah, within their agencies and organizations too.
Because I can't
So
recall any place that gave us a discount, and we had a whole month.
exactly, right? Exactly. I was looking at something recently and I was trying to see if social workers were, and they were not included on the discount. But yeah, I want to just tell you thank you, Dr. Cravens, for getting that patient out that stayed for 16. Because I love to say the social workers are miracle workers, and that feels like one of those times where you were a miracle worker. And do you want to speak to just the complexity of getting her discharged as a brain dead patient with no family?
And I'll give just a little bit of background about her. So when she came in for something simple because she had been, from what everyone could tell, a relatively healthy person. She came in for something simple, like she was having a pain somewhere. While she was there, she had a heart attack and never recovered and ended up becoming vegetated. She had family members listed on the face sheet. And this, of course, all happened before I got there. The family members who were listed on the face sheet were not actually blood family members. These were love family members. So they were not able to do anything because at that point she was already incapacitated. So they were not able to get like a power of attorney, anything like that. So those family members worked with whoever the staff was beforehand, and so they just disappeared. They said they worked with them for about 6 months, and those family members from Love, they disappeared. So when I came, thankfully, the last social worker that they had, she did do the application for guardianship, but it wasn't followed at all. So when I came in, because I knew like that history, I knew we didn't have family for her. So we needed to try to go ahead and initiate guardianship. So thankfully, that social worker who was there, I think she was there like 6 months before I got there. It was the last time they had a social worker. She did the application, but of course, because she left, they had no other person assigned. It just dropped. So I called guardianship. They were able to give me a contact person. Because it had been so long, I had to redo the application. But because they already had her in the system, they were able to kind of process it longer. I mean, quicker. They came out, did their assessments. We got the paperwork done from the doctor. They deemed her incompetent from the legal standpoint. And then so she had a guardian. The guardian was awesome. The guardian already had, so also another complexity with this patient. She's brain dead. She's on dialysis. She has a trach. So very complex. So we were able to find a facility that did in-house dialysis. They had trach care. And they were able to take care of her. So I'm not sure if she's still living. I don't think her prognosis was long. But we were able to at least get her out of that hospital setting, and her guardian was able to care for her. Her guardian was like awesome. She was really helpful in collaborating with me to try to find a facility for her. Once we were able to get her a guardian, within like 6 weeks, she was able to get a facility and she was able to get discharged. But it was so many complexities with that client. I'm like, wow.
And again, making it look easy when it just isn't. It just isn't. And I love that was such an inspiring story too, especially for those who are working in a hospital setting. Sometimes we think it's just so difficult to get clients out, especially when we have administration on our back pressuring us, get the clients out, or get the patient out, get the patient out. But here you are with such a complex case and still successfully did it. So if no one ever said thank you, because obviously she couldn't say thank you, I want to say thank you for going above and beyond to make that happen for her.
Thank you.
Yeah. I am so curious. I know we're staying long on your journey, but I'm loving your journey. You just, when you were talking about it, you're just like, and I started a nonprofit. Like, it's easy. One of the things that I know to be true about social work, I've both, obviously gotten my degrees, all my degrees are in it, but also taught in the profession, in the field. We don't do a really good job about talking to us. We are good with people, but not necessarily business. You know, even when I'm seeing folks going to private practice or what type of practice they want to go, we don't have a foundation in business. But here you are popping out businesses all over the place. Where did that come from, and how have you been able to be so successful in the business part of social work?
So I want to sidebar before I answer that question. I think all schools, especially now since a lot of people want to be LCSWs and have their own private practice, schools should have a business social work class. I'm like, I need to get with some social workers. We need to get a proposal together for this because all of us, like you mentioned, are wanting to start businesses and we don't do a good job. And I still learn stuff every day. So I will tell you, I am surviving, but I'm still learning. But when it comes to, you asked the question of what made me start the businesses, like where did that come from? My grandparents actually were business owners. We owned a car wash and two nightclubs and a funeral home. So, and I just realized this like maybe 5 years ago because somebody was like, "Where did you like your business mind come from?" And I'm like, "I was raised in businesses. It just was something that I just took for granted because I was there all the time." And I was like, "I was exposed to this. I saw my grandparents counting the money in the bag, going to Sam's to stock the stores, helping them fold pamphlets for funerals. Like, I saw those things." So my grandparents were business owners. I believe that's what kind of instilled me being able to see African Americans do their own thing. And I never just necessarily wanted to be completely free, and not work in the corporate world because I don't want to start my own college. I love teaching, so I don't want to ever start my own college. But I wanted to have at least some of that where, you know, it may be like what I do now. My nonprofit, I mostly just work it like as a part-time, but it's mine and I can control it. I can do what I want to do with it. So that's where that came from for me, being exposed at an early age with seeing my grandparents and how they were able to run their business. And my grandfather with the funeral home, he gave away plenty of free funerals. So like being able to just even see that aspect of it as well.
I love that. We often talk about generational curses. We don't give enough credit to ancestral blessings, right? Or ancestral gifts. And that's what that feels like. It's like that was a generational gift that you were handed down to be able to do that. Because, you know, most people don't, you know, at teaching for so long, I would see and listen to Caucasian Americans who are in the MSW program in Social Work 101. Is specifically the MSW programs. That is what you when you ask them, what do you want to do with this degree? Going to private practice, going to private practice. But we didn't ever hear brown people saying that. And so for you to have already done all of those things until even almost with just with your LBSW, right? Starting
No,
not quite.
not too far. Not too far.
Yeah, not too far after being able to start and open up the, but once you start at one,
It's like
you
six more. Yeah.
do all of them. Yeah. And I want to make sure we tell the audience that all of your links for the bag, for the book, for just your consulting business, all of the links that you want to share, we'll make sure are in the podcast description so people can have access to those. Because I
Thank you.
know they want to get that leather bag. And you know what? I was even thinking when you said that the lady who hired you as an LBSW saw your social work t-shirt, how just something in your psyche embedded how important it is to market, I'm a social worker, even while you're in Walmart.
Because let me tell you, and I was gonna wear one today, but I didn't. Every time I'm out, I have on my business shirt. It's just a little, you know, dry fit shirt, but I have it on because I want people to say, "Oh, what is that logo for?" And we start talking, and you become a partner or a volunteer or something for the organization.
Absolutely. I usually have my goddesses of social work earrings on, but I'm loving the yellow pop
I do too. It's cute.
today. So, but yes, I actually get stopped because I wear those earrings. So bag, shirt, earrings, do it. Just advertise in whatever unique way that you can. I got Beyonce's Cowboy Carter shirt and I was wearing it and people recognized it. So
See?
she Beyonce didn't even have to do it, and she is and we're still marketing for her. So yeah. All right. Why you are here is actually because you are one of the speakers for the Affirming Our Presence Behavioral Health Conference. Why did you decide to submit a speaker proposal, and why do you feel spaces like this conference are necessary?
So actually, me and Jasmine spoke probably about 2 years ago. She was doing a community event and I was going to participate in it. And it kind of circled back. One of my good colleague friends, Dr. Dominique, I don't know if she's ever been here before, Dominique Spengler, she was telling me, she was like, I have this lady I work with. I do like quarterly workshops with. And when she showed me a picture, I was like, oh, that's Jasmine. Like we had brief conversations. She was like, there's a conference coming up. You should submit a proposal because I just had did my first NASW proposal back in October. And I was like, you know what? That's a good idea. So I was reminded about it. I submitted it and thankfully it was accepted. I think the topic of SEL is definitely a hot topic right now, but it's still a topic that a lot of people are not aware about. So I want to be in a space where I can educate other social workers and hopefully some of the things that we've been doing here in my community, you can take to your community and utilize it and see some differences in your kids.
Absolutely, absolutely. So why do you think? Because when you look at the conference workshop, it's about 30 social workers and they all look like you, right? And look like me. Why do you think conferences like this are necessary?
Because representation matters from all levels. Like even for me going into the schools in these predominantly African American schools and being able to talk to the kids and they say, oh, she has her PhD and all these things and she looks like me. Same thing for these conferences. Like we meet so many people at these conferences that are in spaces that we can probably only imagine at this point. But being able to talk to someone who's actually doing it and looks like you, it gives you more of a sense of you can do it as well. And that networking piece, I think nobody looks out for us like us. With the bag, I've gotten referrals just based off of, like we're talking about, friends telling friends. Those are some of the reasons I think representation matters, and it allows us to be in a space to where we're comfortable and we can feel free and we can share the way we need to share.
I love that you said that, feel comfortable, right? So that we can share the way that we feel comfortable sharing. So that's good. Can you give us a brief description of your session topic, Changing Perspectives with SEL in Low Income and Minority Areas?
Absolutely. So the area that I currently do most of my work in is where I'm from. It's a low income area, it's a low to moderate income area, and it's a minority area. So our services that we provide the SEL. We do groups with the kids doing SEL methods. And so it basically is going to go over your general, what is SEL, and then we talk about how we're able to include this into the kids that we're working in that are from these areas because, of course, when you think about low income and minority areas, you have to do something different than what you can do in your high earning income areas because what we've seen has been different. What we know to be normal is different. So, helping others understand how you can still provide this service, but for our kids here, you have to do this a little bit differently, to make it work.
I love that. And Dr. Cravens, I was just thinking, you came from geriatrics. Somehow your high school principal pinged you, was like, come do something at the high school. And I guess I missed where that bridge was because here you are blowing up in the geriatric world and switched your population completely. We're talking about diverse populations. How did that happen, and why now is that important to you?
So it always was an area that I felt like I wanted to get into, but I never knew how to get into it outside of your CPS. So what's cool about that principal was his wife is an LCSW. So his wife was the one who mentioned to him, like, you need to start offering these services in your school. So for him, I was the only social worker that he knew outside of his wife. So that's pretty much how that happened. And I'm like, I can figure out how to do anything. Okay, yeah, let's do it. Just a different age. I can do it. And so that's what happened. And so then at some point, I did my SEL certification and I've taken some classes. But when I was originally approached to do it, no connection with what I had been doing at all.
And that's the second time you've mentioned This lady at Walmart saw your earrings and told you to come into her office. Then the dude, you're the only other social worker that the principal knows. And thank goodness for good wives, right? The Bible says you find a wife, you find a
And a
good
good
thing.
thing, hello.
Exactly. And so, and it just feels very synchronistic, or, you know, there's no such thing as coincidence.
Yes.
Yeah.
And honestly, that has been a beauty, honestly, of my career. Like, I didn't mention this with some of my jobs, but even with some of the other jobs that I mentioned to you, someone told me about it. I got to a point to where I don't even apply for jobs anymore. Like, you know, like people tell me about stuff. So that was kind of even like before I transitioned to working from home with United Healthcare, the hospital job I had, somebody told me about that. It was a nursing home, a social worker who did consulting work. That's how I started doing consulting work. She would come in and work for that company and help them. And she was telling me about her full-time job she had. And she was like, we're actually looking for a social worker. Are you interested? I was like, yeah, let me send my resume over. And so it was just like one of those organic things that happened. And those are the things that I love about our profession, is that, like you were trying to figure out the connection. We're so diverse. We can do anything.
We absolutely can. And we're everywhere too. And you know, one of the things that I love when I first was reading your bio is you said you answer the calling of social work. And so I was like, okay, you are one of the ones that I love that says social work is a calling. And I think that when we answer our calling, things like that happen, where this door just miraculously opens and this window flies open for us and this opportunity shows up for us. And so when you answer your soul's calling, the doors will open up for you.
Yes.
I know that we talked a little bit about your bag and just briefly about your book, but I wanted to always give you an opportunity to promote your businesses, your companies, your successes. Is there anything you want to add to that and or that you didn't tell us already?
Honestly, no. I think it would be redundant if I said anything else. I already talked about the book. I didn't give the title. The book is called Quick Guide to Navigating the Healthcare System. It's a short, less than 100-page book that goes over different information that I found useful for patients and caregivers to know that you probably wouldn't know if you were not working in the hospital system. Like, how do I go about getting medical equipment? What are some questions I should ask my doctor? What do these diagnoses mean in layman's terms? So those are some of the things that are covered in the book.
I think that is so helpful, because we often, when I was working in an HIV clinic, I used to think to myself, if I didn't know the medical, here I am with a master's degree and all these licenses, and I struggle to navigate the medical system. And so our clients who don't have any of those things, because they most of the time are disenfranchised folks, that book sounds like it would be really, really helpful as a brief, easy to read guide to help them navigating the medical
Absolutely.
system.
And I'm actually working on one that's more geared for social workers. So if you're a new to just the profession or new to medical, it goes over some of that same information, but it's a little more. I didn't give them everything, because if you're not a social worker, you don't necessarily need to know what codes will get this approved and things like that. But I'm actually working on my second book, which will be more geared at for social workers, but the same concept.
I think that's awesome. And I think it's needed. Keep on filling the gaps, Dr. Cravens.
Thank you.
Keep on filling in those gaps. What is one belief about social work that you have started on this journey with that you feel has changed the most?
So, of course, being in school, you always hear it's about the outcome, not the income. And for me, it's about the income and the outcome. So that quickly changed for me when I realized, like, the amount of money that you can make in the field and the different opportunities we have. So that definitely changed for me early on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I keep hearing that over and over and over again. So hopefully we're changing the narrative. You know, the more we talk about this, that you can live a very well quality life as a social worker and be called to do this work.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I so enjoyed this conversation.
Yes, it this was been, so nice.
Yes. I am coming to our last questions. And what are you looking forward to most from attending the Affirming Our Presence conference? And what do you hope attendees will gain from attending their session or the conference in general?
So I have never been to a conference that was geared at African Americans. I've only been to, our traditional NASW and all those other conferences. So I'm looking forward to seeing what it's like to be at a conference where most of the people there will look like me. And really, I'm not a big person who likes to go to the sessions unless it's like really a great topic, to be honest. I go to conferences for networking. I like to meet people in the hallways, see your shoes, and I'm like, oh girl, those are so cute. And now we start talking and now we connecting. So I'm looking forward to being able to network with other social workers at the conference. And hopefully there is a one or two sessions that I did see I wanted to go to. So I'm looking forward to those sessions. And I hope that the people that come to our sessions are able to learn more about SEL and hopefully take away some tools they can use in their own areas.
I heard you say that you are credentialed or you have a certification in SEL. Will you be talking about that as well during your
Yes,
session?
ma'am.
Good. Awesome. Dr. Cravens, are there any final words of wisdom or advice you would like to leave our audience with today?
Yes, one of my favorite things, and I tell my students this all the time, know the power in your degree. Know that being a social worker is powerful. You have a lot of spaces that we can sit in. You have a lot of money you can make if you want to. So I would just say know the power of your degree. And secondly, seek mentorship. There's nothing wrong with having a mentor. Mentors will give you a lot of helpful information to help you reach the next level in your profession.
Absolutely. I had two folks reach out to me this morning.
I love
So,
it.
yes, mentorship is important. Dr. Cravens, thank you so much for joining the Goddesses of Social Work podcast today. It has been absolutely a joy, and I learned a lot, and you're just a pleasure to speak with.
Yes, it was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. We are glad you were here. If you liked this episode, please come back to hear more stories of the journeys through social work, and please leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. See you next time here on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast.